The North Sound Energy Week with Stork Technical Services, delivering an unrivaled range of assets, inspect and repair services across the globe.
Hello and welcome to the Energy Week podcast. I'm Fiona Winchester. A week which has seen renewable energy supporters put forward their side of the story over wind farms. Oil and Gas UK released their annual activity report. Scottish Power announced a jobs boost and Islanders get a fuel discount. At the start of the week, Donald Trump threatened to launch a long legal battle over wind farms. The billionaire claims he's been advised he could launch and win a lawsuit which would cause lengthy delays to the 11 turbines planned for Aberdeen Bay. Mr. Trump claims he's been betrayed by Alex Salmond and the Scottish Government and has halted work at his many-estate golf course. But North East SNP MSP Mark MacDonald says the tycoon doesn't have much basis for his argument.
Well, the first thing obviously is it's not a wind farm, it's a deployment centre where a range of turbines will be tested and rolled out. The deployment centre will be 3.5 kilometres from the shore, so it will be a distant part of the horizon rather than being absolutely completely visible from onshore. Mr. Trump is entitled to his view. I think he's wrong, but he's entitled to his view. I don't think that he can really be talking about a lawsuit at this stage, given that we've got no decision yet from the authorities as to whether or not the deployment centre will go ahead or not.
Now, Mr. Trump, when you speak with him, claims that he's been, you know, the word that was used was betrayed over this, that he'd been misled into where the European offshore wind deployment centre may be. But is this the case? Have there been changes since Mr. Trump began his development?
Well, I think that Mr. Trump uses very emotive language, and that's always been his style, is to use over-the-top rhetoric. I think that there has been a large amount of funding put towards the deployment centre. There have obviously been discussions between Vattenfall and interested parties such as the Harbour Board in relation to the location of the centre. But I think to talk about betrayal, I think, is taking it a bit too far, to be perfectly honest. I don't think any guarantees or promises would have been given to Mr. Trump regarding the offshore deployment centre.
In that case, then, perhaps that would devalue the legal case if there was nothing in writing to say that wasn't going to be the case, that the wind turbines would be there.
Yeah, that's. I mean, I don't know what the detail of Mr. Trump. You know, if let's you know, hypothetically supposing he did put forward his legal case, I don't know what the terms of it would be or what it would be predicated upon. So I think it would be wrong to speculate at this stage, but. I don't see where he can be taking this from at the moment, given that there are no decisions made yet, although obviously he's entitled to his view.
You spoke about the emotive language and, you know, the drama that goes with a lot of that comes along with Mr. Trump. But, you know, he speaks about the being imprisoned by turbines and things like that. But as you've said, it really is quite a small project at the moment.
It is. I mean, not to diminish the importance of the project or the importance of offshore renewables, which have a huge part to play in the future of not just the Scottish economy, but the European economy. I mean, Scotland has somewhere in the region of 25% of the offshore renewable potential of Europe. So not to downplay that, but in the grand scheme of things, this is not going to be a significant visual impact. And I think that Mr. Trump really needs to maybe reflect on the rhetoric he's using in relation to it.
And would this be something, the consultation is still in process until May, but come then, when there's a decision made, could the two projects impact upon each other, you know, when it comes to decision making for planning and things like that?
Every application that is judged on its individual merits. And I think for anybody to try and use bargaining chips in relation to a project, I think would be unwise. I don't think that would be taken into consideration when a final decision is made on whether or not this project goes ahead.
And would you still like to see Mr. Trump's project progress towards what the final vision, you know, was when it started building last year?
It's very much a decision for Mr. Trump. I don't know what his particular view would be. I would find it difficult to conceive that he would start something out and leave it unfinished. I understand, obviously, he has very strong views in relation to the offshore wind deployment centre, but really what he does with his project is very much a matter for him at this stage.
This came in the same week a new UK government report claimed test sites like the European Offshore Wind Deployment Centre could bring £4 billion to the UK economy. Backed by the Aberdeen Renewable Energy Group, Vattenfall and Technip, the proposal's currently under consultation with Marine Scotland. Spokesman David Roger told our reporter Rebecca Curran they won't let Donald Trump blow them off course.
We very much want to reflect on the news from yesterday, which was the UK government report, which very much is identifying the role that the European Offshore Wind Deployment Centre could have, and certainly the fantastic opportunity that it could have to generate about £4 billion into the British economy. It underlines what we've been saying about the project for some time, which is the importance of this project, and very much a stepping stone for Aberdeen and the northeast of Scotland to win new business in this fast-growing offshore wind sector.
You know, it says it's tackled a critical failure in the offshore wind turbine supply market.
Yeah, well, the report, in a sense, it identifies that there is a degree of innovation and a degree of cost reduction required as we move into the future. And, you know, this is taking a longer-term strategic view of the industry. The figures that are being projected are, you know, maybe over a period of 40 years. But that, in a sense, is exciting because it means that the longer-term view has been taken of the offshore wind industry. And in the same way that we've been able to anticipate the benefits of oil and gas here in this area, to be able to take a long-term view of renewables is very useful.
Absolutely. You know, so some welcome good news, I imagine, yesterday after all the, you know, this particular centre off Aberdeen Bay, it's attracted some controversy.
Yes, well, I mean, wind farms by their nature can be controversial, and people will always have opposing views of wind farms and their visual impact, etc. From our point of view, wind farms can be a controversial subject. And so, you know, the recent debate and publicity surrounding our project, in a sense, we think is helpful because it allows people to consider their own views of the subject and to hear the different things that are being said and really to reach their own conclusions.
I mean, for people that, you know, it's obviously Mr. Trump, it's aesthetics that he was first speaking about. But for other people, you know, that perhaps, I think it was Struan Stevenson, the MSP, had said, you know, that actually they're not that useful. I mean, can you counter that and tell us, you know, why they are and why they do work?
Well, we in Scotland have a fantastic wind resource, which I think most people are probably aware of. And what we're talking about here is harnessing nature in a positive way to deliver clean, green electricity. And we've seen many other wind farms across the UK that have been built, including offshore schemes, that are very effective both as generating electricity, but also in terms of generating an economic benefit for the area in terms of job creation and developing supply chains.
And I suppose it's about looking forward as well, you know, for when oil and gas, you know, we've still got years to come, but, you know, for when that runs out, Alex Salmond himself has said he wants to keep Aberdeen on the forefront of you know, the energy industry. Would this do that?
Well, this is a stepping stone to that future, and in a sense, the expertise and the companies and that wealth of knowledge that exists here in the Northeast, that's very transferable to offshore wind. We have some wonderful companies that are dealing with subsea, with vessels, with marine installations, and that knowledge really does transfer into the renewables world, not just for offshore wind, but for the coming wave and tidal industries also.
How hopeful are you that ministers in Marine Scotland are going to back?
Well, we're very hopeful. We think we've made a very strong case for this development, and we're looking forward to a decision sometime later this year.
Last time that we'd spoken with the Trump Organisation, they said they were hoping to set up a phone call between yourselves and their representatives.
Yeah. Well, we have had regular conversations with the Trump Organisation, and of course we acknowledge the opposing views of our project, but we do really believe that we should be coming together and to work together on a future where both projects exist. And in recent weeks, we've been very pleased to hear that the Scottish Chamber of Commerce and the Scottish Council for Industry and Development, along with the local ACCEF Economic Forum, they've all said that both these projects are important for the northeast of Scotland, and we would very much echo that view.
The North Sound Energy Week with Stork Technical Services, a leading energy support partner where safety and people always come first.
Wednesday was the last day for submissions to the Scottish Parliament's Energy Committee inquiry into renewable targets. Mr Trump has asked to speak in front of the MSPs in person, but Dr Richard Dixon from WWF Scotland says the billionaire's arguments don't stand up.
We're clear that the targets are achievable, so 100% of our domestic consumption of electricity could be coming from renewables by just 2020. We're already at something like 35%, and we've already got in planning or in being built or certainly being scoped almost everything else we need to meet that target. So we pretty much know where all of that energy is going to come from in 2020 to meet that target. So can we meet the target? Well, it would be almost hard not to meet that target, given that there's so much in the pipeline.
And the focus, the inquiry in recent weeks has perhaps had more attention than it would have had with the possibility of Donald Trump coming up in person to speak in front of the committee. So, you know, how do you feel when you hear things like that and the quite strong worded arguments that have been coming from Mr. Trump about, in particular, wind farms in general, but in particular the one in the planning at the moment in Aberdeen Bay?
Well, I think everyone's entitled to their opinion, of course, but the problem with Mr. Trump is that he wants to back that opinion up with £10 million worth of PR campaign to tell us all that renewables are bad. So he's putting in danger what actually should be our industrial future in Scotland. Renewables have a potential to create many tens of thousands of jobs. For Aberdeen, they're absolutely crucial. Aberdeen is an oil city, but that's going to change, and Aberdeen needs a new future, and that's obviously the thing to go for is renewables. So Aberdeen can be a renewable energy city in the future, but not if Mr. Trump succeeds and tries to weaken our targets and particularly creates uncertainty so that some of the big international companies that are already interested in Scotland think, oh, well, maybe it's not quite such a good place to come because there's this controversy. So it could be very damaging. We have, of course, had lots of international companies coming here because it's the place to do business on renewables. So we're actually doing rather well. But this is certainly an obstacle in the way, this £10 million that Mr. Trump may or may not put up.
And Mr. Trump has, you know, been quite vocal in the fact that not only does he think that the wind turbines are unpleasing aesthetically, but also he's questioned the quality of energy that comes from turbines. So again, if people are hearing these arguments, as you said, it can be misleading.
Yes, it can be very misleading, and I think it's possible that the best outcome is that Mr. Trump is called in front of the inquiry, because I think then we would see that he doesn't actually know very much about renewable energy or indeed energy policy. So he's, as I say, entitled to his opinion. There are lots of people who like wind turbines, lots of people who don't, and that's fine. But to try and object to them on grounds that aren't really factually correct, so to talk about them as inefficient when actually they're very efficient when the wind is blowing, or to talk about issues about climate change, to deny climate change, or to say that you'd much rather have nuclear, these are rather specious arguments if actually the reason you're objecting is you don't really want some turbines on the horizon when you're playing golf. So if he doesn't want them on the horizon when he's playing golf, that's fine, he can say that. But to try and get around the Scottish political process, to spend a lot of public relations money in Scotland to try and damage an industry which is potentially extremely important to Scotland, really does look pretty poor. So it does look like bully boy tactics, I'm afraid.
Also this week, industry body Oil and Gas UK released their 2012 activity survey showing the impact of the surprise windfall tax introduced by the coalition government. While there's been high investment in some large projects, the figures show a record drop in production while exploration halved in the past year. I spoke with Chief Executive Malcolm Webb about the figures.
Well, there are several headlines that come out of this year's activity survey, and I'm afraid not all of them are good. There is an increased investment that we've seen in the industry, and that is good. We see capital investment increasing, but that's offset, that good headline is offset by some disturbing news in other areas. Exploration, we have seen really halve the number of exploration wells drilled last year to the year before, fell by 50%. And the production volumes of last year were 18% down on the previous year. And on top of that, we're seeing an acute fall in capital efficiency. In other words, the rate at which a pound of investment buys, how much oil and gas does it buy? So that's fallen quite dramatically as well. So there's some good news, some limited good news, but some other disturbingly disquieting news around the basin at the moment.
So what would you like to see happen, Malcolm, to, you know, offset these negatives?
Well, what we believe that we need to continue is the good work that we've been doing with the government over the last year to try and bring a degree of more certainty to the tax regime here, and also to help some developments which at the moment aren't going ahead because of tax, to just change the tax rules slightly so that they can go ahead. And I would say that everything we're asking of the Exchequer, we fully understand the budget constraints the government's working in at the moment, so it's all at no net cost to the Exchequer. If the government can do that, improve the stability and certainty and predictability of the fiscal regime here, that will do a very great deal to help us.
We heard last week, you know, the possibility that half the revenue from North Sea oil and gas could still be to come. So surely, you know, it's in the interest of the Exchequer to support the industry as much as they can.
I think that's true, and I think the government and the Exchequer understand that too as well, and that's why I don't know what's in this budget that's coming up, but I'm hopeful for what's going to be in there. It's in all of our interest to make sure that we maximise the recovery from the offshore areas around the UK. There's up to 24 billion barrels of oil and gas that could be got. At the moment, our plans, unfortunately, only extend to about 10 billion of that. We need to make sure that we capture all of it if we possibly can. I think it's well understood between the government and the industry the importance of this, and therefore I am hopeful that we're going to hear the right things on March 21st, Budget Day.
And with the uncertainty in the fiscal regime, you're having such a visible impact here in the figures. Would you estimate that, you know, obviously we've got the referendum coming up in Scotland, you know, would you estimate that possibly having an impact looking ahead to next year's figures?
I don't think so. I've not heard anything, and I've got no evidence to suggest that the existence of the referendum is causing any particular problems in the industry at the moment. And I would hope, given the importance of this industry, you know, and let's remember that this industry is the largest industrial investor in the United Kingdom, let alone in Scotland. It's certainly, you know, Scotland's biggest industrial investor too. One would hope and expect, I think, really, the administrations north and south of the border to make sure that there wasn't any undue disruption to this hugely important industry.
Also this week, energy giant Scottish Power announced 300 new engineering and technological jobs. First Minister Alex Salmond made the announcement at their Cumbernauld base.
You can't mobilise just on resources, even if these resources are hugely competitive. You have to have the people who bring these resources to the population in terms of the delivery of power, which is both reliable and sustainable and compatible with the future of this planet.
And that's the Energy Week podcast. I'm Fiona Winchester.
The North Sound Energy Week with Stark Technical Services, delivering asset integrity solutions to the global energy industry.